I want to talk a little bit about Tweet Me Harder, which was a podcast that you've released, I think, 76 episodes of at this point with Chris Straub. But the regular series has ended, and I listened to quite a few of the episodes, and I wonder what your initial idea was for it, because having listened to the early ones and then listening to the later ones, the early episodes kind of have a very different feeling.
I'm actually curious to hear what you think the difference is between early and late period Tweet Me Harder.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I felt like in the early ones, I recall you were doing some things where you had like some kind of topics and you asked people to specifically respond with an idea or a memory or something like that. And the later ones, I feel, are like really, really well-tuned improvisational theater. Because I think you, it seems like you and Chris got really well that whole sort of yes and idea, where each of you would run with things. And I didn't see as much of that early on. It was more like you really tried to hit the tweet inclusiveness a lot harder then.
I think that's probably a fair characterization. I think at the beginning we were still finding our footing, obviously.
Right.
These things always take time to get into a rhythm of. And Tweet Me Harder is the world's first, best, only, and last talkback-enabled interactive audio pod blast, which is another way of saying it's a live internet radio talk show that people could tune in and listen to, and using Twitter they could respond. And we would see their responses, and we would incorporate that into the show. So it's like having a call-in radio show, except using Twitter. And people could also chat with each other. Other listeners from all around the world could listen to the same show live and then converse among each other and sort of have their own conversations about what was going on. And the topics were usually pretty varied, but my co-host Chris and I would often either ask for questions from the audience, and then we'd solve their questions, quote-unquote solve, in the most absurd way, or figure out some way to improve the world or some device that we think could make life a little easier, and then try and keep building additional details on top of it to explore the most ridiculous ramifications of it. So it was a comedy show, and it was born from two things. Chris and I have a very shared comedic sensibility where whenever we get into conversations with one another, and this was true just this weekend, he and I spent a couple days together, and this was the case absolutely 100% of the time, we would spin off on these crazy tangents about just observational details. For example, we were eating breakfast at a Coco's, and for some reason, I noticed that there was food left on my knife. And I said, and somehow this got into a whole supposition that the owner of Coco's was a Depression-era merchant and wanted there to be food on the knife so that all the patrons would realize that they weren't poor, that they could afford to waste food. And why would this? What kind of conversations would have led to that decision? And what did the people at Coco's corporate have to say about it? And so on and so on. And then our food arrived, and then that was the end of the conversation. So we observe those details, and we like to just try and make each other laugh with the most absurd speculation. So that dynamic between the two of us was something that had existed. And then he and I are both internet cartoonists, but he and I both recognize that on the internet, you don't have to be one thing. You can be multiple things. People who like what you have to say because of your personality or because of your point of view are interested in things that you do in different media as well. And so he and I both have a sort of a performative streak in us, and we decided we wanted to put together a show that would allow us to perform in a way that doing comics doesn't really. Comics is more of a writing, reading type of activity, and doing talk radio or podcasting is more of a talking, making jokes kind of activity. And so we wanted to try some of the latter after having done the former for a very long time. And the result was Tweet Me Harder.
So it got a really good following. I think it had a spot on iTunes as one of their recommended podcasts. But there weren't sponsorships or any sort of underwriting or commercials really associated with the project. And in that case, how do you measure the success of something like Tweet Me Harder in a business sense?
That's a really good question. You're right that there were not really sponsorships. There were one or two little very brief spots that happened to come about by chance. But a lot of podcasts will have sponsors, or they'll have advertising built in, or in some cases they'll offer merchandise. All those things can only work if the audience for the product is built first. You can't sell advertising if there's no one to advertise to, because no one will pay for the advertising. You can't sell merchandise if no one will buy the merchandise. So our primary goal was always to build an audience, just to get people interested. And we had always figured, well, the monetization of it, because it's not expensive to do a podcast. You just need a microphone. So we didn't have really a lot of costs involved. The monetization, we always figured, could come later, if ever. It was more of an exercise in, let's do this kind of for fun. We had that luxury. We did do a couple pieces of merchandise. We did a book, and I guess that was... Oh, we did some posters, I think, at one point. And we actually have some half-finished merchandise ideas that may never see the light of day at this point. We also did some live shows. But we never charged admission for them because we just wanted people to come and enjoy it. But we'd sell books afterwards and so on. But the way that we measured the success of it was by the audience response. And in the case of Tweet Me Harder in particular, it was a very the live audience is a built-in conceit. And so we can tell at a glance if people are engaged with it because they're either responding to us or they're not. And it was definitely something that we saw increase over the course of the run of the show, which is what you would expect. It did develop a very loyal audience. At the same time, there are some things, I think, like the longer you do this kind of internet thing, you can see where things can take off instantly or things can have a really low, long, slow churn. And Machine of Death was something that took off instantly. And Tweet Me Harder was something that had a very long, slow churn. So we knew that it was going to be tough to make this into some sort of merchandising bonanza. Not that that was ever our goal, but for the amount of time that went into it, it was going to be tough to make it sustainable. And I think some of our performative impulses got shuttled onto other things. When Tweet Me Harder started, Chris and I hadn't done any other performance stuff. And since it started, Chris has two web shows on Penny Arcade TV, and I'm on a team at my local improv theater. And so some of those impulses were a little bit satisfied.